Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Election College, episode 248, Julia Grant.
Let's throw a political party. Face it, the political scene sucks, but did it always? It's time for Election College, and class is in session. Now, your hosts, Jason Goff and Ben Smith.
Wow, Ben, there have been so many people listening to the U.S. Grant episode. It's crazy because when I think of popular presidents, Grant, yeah, popular, maybe a little bit of trouble during the actual presidency, but a popular guy. Man, tons of people listening and enjoying that content, but we didn't really mention Julia. So here, this is the episode. This is Julia's episode.
Well, I mean, I figure it's probably just all the people searching for the name Ulysses, and the Google SEO rankings are just like funneling them to our episode because everybody searches for the name Ulysses all the time. So
maybe we should change the name of the podcast to the Ulysses College.
Oh,
or Ulysses College.
Ulysses Election College. Like we could brand it.
Yeah. So make it that domain name quick.
Yeah. If somebody wants to hurry up and pay for those naming rights, we'll let you. No problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, but, you know, he was married. He was married to Julia, right. And we're going to talk about her today.
So Julia was born in 1826 in St. Louis, Missouri. Her parents were Frederick and Ellen Dent, and they were slaveholders. We talked a little bit about the fact that Julia's family were slaveholders back when we did the U.S. Grant episode. And her dad had about 30 different African Americans who were enslaved, and he really was not interested in letting them go. He was not interested in, I mean, they were, in his opinion, they were his property. And so whenever emancipation came around and the law was passed, he did it, but only because it was the law, not because he thought it was the right thing to do. And Julia is the fifth of eight children, and Julia really seemed to enjoy her childhood. You know, you understand a lot of people are really downtrodden at this time, and there's a lot of crazy things going on with the economy and stuff. But in her memoirs, she actually describes her childhood as one long summer of sunshine, flowers, and smiles.
Yeah, and her family, they were connected very well. I mean, they had famous and elite relatives in cities such as Cincinnati and Louisville and Pittsburgh, and, you know, William Clark, the Lewis and Clark, he was a family friend. And like a lot of women who grew up in these elite households, she was trained as a musician. She was a skilled pianist. She knew how to ride a horse and loved to read.
So Julia was born with strabismus, and strabismus is the technical name for what we commonly know as being cross-eyed, and, you know, obviously not a life-threatening condition, but certainly a difficult one to live with sometimes. And basically, it doesn't allow both eyes to line up in the same direction, so she's certainly subconscious about this. And when she's younger, a surgeon offers to perform an operation to get it fixed. And Julia's like, no, that doesn't sound like, I mean, surgery doesn't sound fun to me.
She's like, it's the mid 1800s and surgery on the eyes is probably not going to be beneficial.
Yeah. Yeah. So she says no. And then her husband gets elected president, which, you know, is fine with her. And she thinks maybe I'll go ahead and get surgery and get this fixed. And Ulysses is like, no, I fell in love with the eyes you had at the beginning and the eyes you have right now. don't you dare go and change them. And so she didn't. And so because she was a little self-conscious about that, and she always took her portraits, or she always sat for her portraits. I took her portraits. I'm such a 20th century guy. She would sit in profile whenever her portraits were being taken or painted.
Yeah. So the whole story about how she and Ulysses got together really begins at West Point. Not that she was at West Point, but her brother, Fred, was a fellow student of Grant. And he wrote to his sister and he's like, hey, quote, I want you to know him because he's pure gold. And I don't think he was literally gold, but, you know, his character.
It's
gold,
possible. Right? You don't know.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I don't know. It's true. So in 1844, U.S. Grant, he's like, I'm going to head out to Missouri and visit the Denton family. Why not? Because Fred's a pretty nice guy. Might as well meet his sister, right? And he does take a liking to her. And there's this one cute story about how, well, this is kind of sad, but her pet canary dies. And Ulysses makes this little yellow coffin and gets eight of his fellow officers together. And they have this funeral service for the canary. And Julia's like, dude, if you are going to have a funeral service for my canary, I'm going to marry you.
Do you remember the episode of The Office where the bird dies and they have a funeral for it? So Michael feels better. Oh my goodness.
What was the song they sang? I can't remember.
I don't remember, but I know Dwight played his recorder.
Yeah. Yeah. That was special.
Yeah.
And no offense to anybody who has a bird, because I know that can be a special thing.
Yeah. But it's still funny as funny, and that's fine. So Grant gets shipped out to Louisiana, and the Mexican War is coming up here, and Julia is pretty upset about it. And of course she gets, you know, she has a dream and that he's going to come back to her, and he'll be wearing civilian clothes and all that kind of stuff. And everybody's like, yeah, that's not going to happen, Julia. Sorry. And honestly, it didn't seem like it was going to happen, but it turns out Ulysses did come back to Julia, and the two of them get engaged. And, well, that's the start of the 4 years that they kind of were apart from each other. And whenever that he gets back to the United States, he goes on leave and they're going to get married. As we mentioned in the U.S. Grant episode, his father, Jesse, says, I am not going to their wedding. I like Julia. She seems great. Actually, they probably had never met, but I like Julia. She seems great, but I don't like the fact that her family owned slaves, and therefore I'm not going to go to that wedding since it's going to be, they're going to be there, basically.
Yeah. So the Grants, they're all married up now, and Ulysses goes back to the army. Julia gives birth to Frederick in 1850, and then to Ulysses Simpson Grant in 1852. And Ulysses, he's all over the place out in the West Coast, and he did not care to be away from his family. So in 1854, he says, see ya to the army. And they moved to a farm called Hardscrabble in St. Louis, which, you know, if you're going to name your home, might as well name it Hardscrabble, right?
That's right.
So Ulysses purchases a slave from Fred, you know, his old West Point roommate, and the Grants are poor, and he's like, go free. And that was and as you can imagine, that made quite the impact. And a little bit later, he becomes ill, Ulysses does, with malaria, and he's unable to run his farm. So they move in with Julia's parents, and once he recovers, he takes a job as a collector. You know, he was Guido Grant, right?
Yeah.
And he collects rents for a real estate firm in St. Louis. Still couldn't earn a lot of money. And in 1860, he's like, hey, Dad, I need help. So he gets offered a job in the family leather business. You know, they're retainers, right? And he earned $600 a year, and he thought, hey, this could go a long way in helping us get out of debt. So he packs up the kids and Julia, and they move to Illinois.
So the beginning of the Civil War rolls around, and Ulysses is, you know, off doing war stuff. He gets lonely, and so he sends for Julia to come and be with him. And she goes and meets up with him. She leaves the kids with some other family members, and she was able to stay with him in Memphis and Vicksburg and Nashville and Virginia. And, well, she covered a lot of ground, I guess you could say, just to be able to be with Ulysses. And at one point, there was a house that she was in that was getting raided by one of the Confederate generals. And basically, the owner said, okay, look, you can raid my house, you can ransack it, whatever you want to do, but not before this lady gets out. And so they were respectful, and she was able to go out before he ransacked the house. So yeah, it really helped Grant. He really did rely on Julia. She helped kind of raise him up, as it were, his spirits, and allowed him to be happy, basically. So whenever Grant was appointed as commander of the Union armies, Lincoln was like, I'm a smart guy. I know that a good man needs a good wife. And he actually sends for Julia to go and join Ulysses because he knows that she's going to bring his spirits up.
Yeah. So by the time 1868 rolls around, Julia's like, yes, I want Ulysses to be president. After all, he's been a good military leader, right? Maybe not the best businessman, but, you know, I love him. And so she really gets involved in his campaign. And this is to the point where Grant was like, hey, wife, I hope you're happy. I won. And she's like, well, of course, my love, let's move to Washington, right? So Julia was made to be first lady. She really ate it up. She was a great hostess. She was very popular. She planned state dinners, which were quite lavish. They, if you were to go to a Grant state dinner, you would have enjoyed expensive wines and liquors. And unlike Mary Todd Lincoln, she was quite popular and avoided a lot of the criticism that had been directed towards Mrs. Lincoln. Everybody thought, hey, Mrs. Grant, she's all right.
Julia was really one of the first ones that kind of made the first ladyship, as you will, be a thing. There were others, obviously, before that. Many of them were very popular even. But she was kind of upset the fact that, like, you know, all these foreign leaders, their wives are given dignity and respect and honored. And the First Lady doesn't really get that. I mean, the First Lady is kind of seen as you stay in the White House and you do your thing. But she really brings that kind of prestige to the position and helps move it forward. So she also was very interested in making sure that the spouses of diplomats and people in the cabinet and in Congress and the Supreme Court and all that kind of stuff, that they were all given the same regard. So maybe you wouldn't even really know much about the First Lady if it weren't for Julia Grant.
Yeah. And she begins the tradition of getting the White House in order as far as making it quite elaborate. And she replaces Andy Jack's three chandeliers that were kind of, you know, not as illustrious as these big French model chandeliers. And she really enjoyed her time in the White House. As a matter of fact, when Hayes and Tilden had that controversial election in 1876, she was hoping that everybody was going to be like, you know what? We just need to keep Grant in office for a little bit longer. And Ulysses was like, no, I want to get out of town. Julia's like, hey, I want to hang out here because I'm enjoying my time here. And she was very disappointed, as a matter of fact, that he didn't run for a third term. And get this, Ben, a little trivia for you. Uh-huh. She's the first lady to be recorded on film.
Wow. Interesting.
Here, we'll show you a clip.
Yeah.
There. Hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, everybody. This is now a video podcast. Sorry. So there's some interesting things about some of Julia's beliefs and the way she thought. And of course, we all have some weird inconsistencies, but Julia is a staunch defender of women's rights. And really, you know, even if you were going to make a somewhat crude joke or maybe like the modern day blonde joke. You know, if you were going to make something that would be at the expense of a woman, that wasn't going to happen if she was around. And honestly, like, she was against polygamy. She grilled Brigham Young about this, everything. She didn't really think that women should be allowed to work. Maybe not that they should be allowed to, but that they should. She didn't come out and support women's suffrage, although there was an anti-suffrage petition that went around that she refused to sign, but she wasn't like, she didn't voice it, I guess you could say. She grew up on a plantation. Of course, her family had slaves, but not really sure how she felt about slaves. She had them because of her family, but at the same time, was she okay with them? She didn't really think that blacks were fully equal to whites, but she also wasn't a white supremacist, which I don't know if there's a distinction there. It's a distinction without a difference, but anyway. So yeah, some kind of wonky views at the same time as having a lot of credibility.
Yeah, one thing about that, just to try to give a positive spin, she was all about saying, hey, White House staff who happen to be African-American, why don't you buy some land in the District of Columbia? It's pretty cheap and you can make this a good investment for the future. And she did greet anyone with respect if they were in fine attire, but a lot of times you didn't see African-Americans in fine attire just because, well, for obvious reasons, a lot of times African-Americans weren't beneficiaries of the American dream like the white people were. So after the Grants leave the White House, they take this whirlwind world tour all over the place, and they decide to retire in New York City. And well, we've all heard about how they spent all their money and they lost a lot of it in an investment scheme, and they depended greatly on the personal memoirs that Grant was writing just up until his death.
Yeah, so Julia also wrote her own memoirs, as mentioned slightly before, and she was really the first first lady to write a memoir. And she wrote it, but it was like 75 years before anybody picked it up and published it. And that was actually not until 1975, and that's pretty crazy. She is laid to rest in a sarcophagus next to her husband, at that big tomb we talked about during the Grant episode, there in New York City.
Yeah. So there you have it. The life of Julia Grant. I'm sure there's a lot more that can be said about Julia. I always thought the eye thing was fascinating because, you know, if somebody's getting just their portrait taken from a profile, you kind of think, wow, how arrogant, but actually she was trying to cover one of her insecurities.
Hey, everybody, if you want to show your support for Election College, why don't you head over to iTunes? I know we've probably never mentioned that you've heard, but head over to iTunes and leave us a nice little review. We would really appreciate it, and it helps other people know, is this a good podcast? Yes. Yes, it is a good podcast, and you should listen to it.
Yeah, you might learn a few things, and we'd love to interact with you on social media. You can do that at Election College on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Thanks, everybody. See you next time.